Hour number two of 3D. Darren McFarlane, Willie Dunnick here with you on this Friday morning. D-Mace will be back with us next week. You just made the list coming up to kick off the third hour of the program. Right now, we'll talk a little bit about the Titans and their big game Monday night against the Indianapolis Colts at Nissan Stadium. Cameron Wolf covers Titans for ESPN. Cameron, how you doing? Good morning.
Good. How y'all doing?
Doing wonderful. So I guess some of the big questions are the health of the Titans. And we'll just start at the elephant in the room. Everybody wants to know, you know, what is the status on eight? How has he looked this week? You're not sure. I realize we're probably not going to get anything, but your vibe of just being out there every day, we're not. What is your vibe on the status of Marcus Mariota and his availability on Monday?
Well, as far as earlier this week, maybe even as early as Thursday before practice, I thought there was a lot of optimism. I probably would have said the chances were about 50-50. But there seemed to be a little bit of a shift in the parade of optimism, so to speak, yesterday. And Mike Mularkey basically letting us know that he has to see more than he's seen from Marcus so far for him to play. And that was the biggest clue or the biggest comment that we've got all week from Mularkey as far as what Marcus hasn't been able to do. But what we've been able to see on the field, he's been able to take snaps from under center, drop into about three or five-step drops, hand the ball off to running backs. But he hasn't shown a lot of lateral movement in the pocket, and that's really the last step, that pocket mobility, so that you know when the Colts are coming with a blitz or pressure that he's not going to be a sitting duck in the pocket. So, you know, today's practice will be big. This is what they're treating as a Thursday practice since they have the extra day. So this will probably be the final full day where they go through, you know, a lot of the team periods, and it probably be important for Marcus to get some reps in that area to progress. So I think it's still pretty questionable. I'm eager to see what he does today. But I think it'll end up being a game-time decision regardless to keep the Colts guessing.
Willie and I have been covering the team and around them since they arrived here in Nashville, and we've seen some pretty good backups in the past, whether it was Neil O'Donnell or Billy Volek or Matt Hasselbeck or Kerry Collins. I mean, they've been really lucky in the past with some of their backup quarterbacks. If they had something like that in place, something that everybody felt really good about, at least for a short period of time, I think it changes this whole conversation. But because of what they have behind number eight and what we saw play out down in Miami, it kind of changes the conversation, because to me, we know he's not going to be 100%, but like, what is the percent? Is it 75 to 80%? Like, what is the magic number for them to say, we know he's not going to be 100%, but this percent of Mariota is better than what we have behind him?
Right, right. I think that's the question they're discussing in the rooms. I don't know if it's necessarily a number more than how much is he able to do. Like, if he's a guy where I don't think they'll put him in there if they feel like he can't move left to right, if he can't avoid a blitz, if he can't shake off a passer. But do you let him move if you don't think that he can get to the sideline, or if he can't get outside the pocket, if you're worried about his hamstring getting tight at halftime? I think those are all questions that they'll have to answer as far as him. And does he have a risk of re-injuring it? The hamstring is the injury, as we've seen with Corey Davis and DeMarco Murray earlier this year. That's an injury that can easily be re-injured, and it can worsen. So if you feel like, you know, he can go out there and play at 80%, but he can tear that hamstring and be out for 6 to 8 weeks, then they're not going to put him out there. So I think there's a little bit of added urgency because this is a game against the Colts where, you know, the loser drops into the cellar, but you also have to decide what's the long-term best play for Marcus.
Let's go over some of the other entries. Let's start with Taylor Lewan, who obviously had a tough Sunday down in Miami, spent most of the time on the sidelines. What's his status, and maybe update us on some others?
Yeah, I think Taylor will be good to go. He was limited yesterday in practice. his mobility is going to be the thing with him. It's that knee injury. They didn't say exactly what it is, but it's probably some type of tweak or sprain in the knee. It seems like something that he's going to play with. He may not be 100%, so you might have to watch if he potentially re-injures that or if it affects his skill level. But I think he'll push to go. Corey Davis will be out, and Jonathan Cyprian will be out as well. Both of those guys, Jonathan Cyprian will be out against Cleveland. He's probably not going to be back until after the bye. Corey Davis is a guy that could push to play against Cleveland, but he may be another guy that sits out until after the bye. And those are really their major injuries, guys that are really in danger of missing, you know, the next week or two.
Cameron Wolf is with us, covers the Titans for ESPN.com. Cameron, I really enjoyed the piece on Adoree Jackson and his mom. And for people that haven't seen this, Adoree's mom is going to be honored as the 12th, I guess, 12th person on Monday Night Football. Really cool story. And, you know, she's a cancer survivor, and that's a big initiative, of course, for the NFL. So tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, Adoree's mom was great. I talked to her for about probably 30 minutes on the phone yesterday, and she's the nicest lady. And she was just, you know, she calls Adoree Sweet Pea. That's a nickname that he's got since he was about a year and a half. She told me the story, basically said that they were bringing in groceries one day, and she was trying to give him a loaf of bread to take in the house, and he looked at her like she was crazy and said that, "I'm going to grab the 2 gallons of milk and carry it into the house as a one-and-a-half-year-old." So from that day, she talked about, called him Sweet Pea, basically a message to him being small but mighty. So that kind of stuck with him. But the story tried to tell, you know, some of the lessons that she taught Dory, and then some of, you know, the strength that she showed him and how that helped him advance. You know, she was diagnosed with breast cancer in May of 2015, and her first thought was not to tell Dory. She didn't tell him until Christmas break. Because she was worried about it affecting his grades, affecting his mindset, because they're so close. But luckily, when she was able to tell him officially the news in Christmas, she had just learned 2 weeks before that she was cancer-free. So it was sort of the good news, bad news combo that she was able to deliver during Christmas break. So I just thought it was a good look into what she's done and you know, her being honored this weekend and the impact she's had on Adoree's life.
We enjoyed talking to him in the preseason. He's obviously a real wide-eyed kid, confident, and it's vital for him, Cameron. As you know, the way the roster is set up right now, they really need him to continue to get better. And he's battling out there. He's getting tested every week. He's not the biggest guy. What, when you talk to the coaches, how do they feel about his progress, and how much better do you think he can get?
Yeah, no, I think he can be a really good player. I think the thing that's tough for us as media, for fans and people outside of the rooms, is that we don't know how much this is different from maybe what he was learning in college and how much he has to catch up. This is a guy who played basketball and ran track for most of his life, so he's still learning the cornerback position. The best part of his game is that he's an athlete and that he has the ability to do just about anything that you need him to do, with size being one of the main deterrents. So I think that he'll continue to grow. I think he's one of those guys that maybe 2018, 2019, we look at him and say, you know, Adoree's a number one corner for this team. It may not look like that right now. He may go through his struggles. There will be some games where he's the weakness that teams try to target. But I do think that he has upside, and the coaches tell me that they're excited about his long-term future, and they believe that he can be a difference maker as a returner and a cornerback for a long time in this league.
Cameron Wolf is with us, ESPN Titans beat writer. And, Cameron, I'm guessing you were on hand when Rishard Matthews shared his latest view, and I don't think it surprised anybody. He's been very passionate about the subject. Even though, I guess, the league, is it fair to say the league initiative is trying to move forward out of more of this protest during the anthem, or at least take some of the focus off of that. But Rishard has been very adamant about it. He's continued to do his thing. I'm curious, is the team still behind the scenes? Are they still okay with him doing this? Are they supportive of him doing that? And he obviously still has a job to do on the field, and they need him to be a very productive wide receiver.
And why did he delete the tweet if that's the way he felt?
Yeah. Yeah. No, those are definitely reasonable questions, and we hope to get a little bit more answers from Rashard today. He wasn't in the locker room yesterday to answer any of those questions. But I think first, from Rashard's perspective, I know I've talked to him several times. He feels strongly about his stance, and he feels like he doesn't want to be forced to change that stance. You know, he's already donated $75,000 to oppressed communities. He's, you know, stated his views on racial injustice and police brutality. As far as bringing it up in this elk, I think, and like I said, we'll talk to him later today. I don't know if that was the best route to go about, one, putting it on Twitter, and two, quickly deleting it, because it sort of leaves a lot of openings on what your true intentions are. And making a stance like that is only going to bring a lot of attention. So if that's what he wanted, then that's something that he should, you know, be able to stand up and tell us his reasoning and stand behind whatever stance he has. But if that's not what he wanted, it brings definitely a distraction to the team, because, you know, obviously he's under contract. This is his second of a 3-year contract, and saying that she'll, you know, quit if the NFL changes a rule is something that's going to open eyes from the coach to the GM, to the players in the locker room around him. So I know his teammates and coaches and GMs probably have been asking him a lot of questions today. We'll try to ask him some questions later in the locker room, because it does open up another can of worms with his comment, whether he stands by it or he has something else to say.
When I really sit there and think about it, we had a really interesting conversation with him in the preseason before it really started picking up, the whole anthem thing, the Donald Trump comments. But one thing that strikes me is he might have the most unique perspective on this whole issue of anybody in the NFL, because he played with Colin Kaepernick. He's very close with Colin Kaepernick, having played together at Nevada, and his military background with his father and his brother. So I think he's a guy that has really taken this to heart. He's thought about it deeply. And so I think you have to respect, at least, that he's not just being flippant about this whole thing. This is something that's very passionate to him.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I talked to him last month when the Titans had stayed in the locker room, and that was a big issue. And one of the things that he told me was that, I don't want this to be a publicity stunt. Like, this is something that he fully stands with Colin Kaepernick with, in his stance. He feels like, you know, racial injustice and police brutality is a huge issue. And like you mentioned, the common excuse or the common deterrent for people who don't agree with this method of protest is that they feel like it's a disrespect of the flag and the military. But you're looking at a guy who has a father that served 23 years in the Marines and whose brother died in Afghanistan serving the country. So that sort of is a tough argument to make when it's a guy who clearly had a lot of military through his blood. So I think his stance is trying to make that you can support the military and have this stance. And as we go through these protests and see how player stances evolve and how the NFL responds to it, it's going to be continually important to get different voices with different perspectives, so that we don't have one single-minded view of the way this whole issue should be handled.
What is your take, Cameron, on this? Because to me, when you think about it, whether you agree or disagree, and I think most people understand what's going on. I just think right now the fans have made it abundantly clear. This is just my opinion, just trying to read the room, as we say. Fans, they can't get past the timing. It's all about the timing of where this is taking place. And mm-hmm. they can't get past that, whether it's for the right reason or not. Even if they're on board, they can't get past where it's taking place. And it's very clear there is a big portion of fans, because of the outrage and because of all the stuff that's been happening over this with the fans, that is the hang up. And I don't know. I think to me, it's very clear they're not going to get past that. I mean, they're not going to change the fans' mind. So where are you on that? Do you agree with that assessment, or what is your take?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of black and white as far as people views points in this issue. And like many issues in America, whether political or otherwise, if you're on one extreme, it's going to be very hard, if not impossible, to draw you from one side or the other.
Yeah, fair
Typically,
point.
Typically, the people typically the people, the message that people are trying to do is to sway people in the middle, people who are not necessarily formulated a decision one way or the other to try to shift that viewpoint. Otherwise, it's just two sides yelling at one another at something that's not necessarily going to get growth. For me, I'm a big supporter of players voicing their right to protest, their right to speak in the manner that they feel like is appropriate, to use their platform. I think oftentimes we don't see athletes as people as much as we should, and they have thoughts and ideas and ways to change the world, and I believe that we should absolutely let them use their platform to do that. As far as the protests, I, like I'm sure many people do, am a little worried that the message has been misconstrued, whether that's because of President Trump's comments, whether that's because of media coverage or players not being clear enough with their message. The initial message was against racial injustice and police brutality, which I believe is an issue. I believe that a lot of people in America, if they were able to pay attention to what's going on, would see it as an issue. And I think it's something definitely worth bringing attention to. As far as the method, I'm not in their shoes. I know a lot of people would rather this thing be quieter, not to go into the anthem. But I did see the Cowboys trying to do a unity stance before, and they were booed before kneeling before the anthem. And I saw an NHL player raise up his fist during the anthem, and he was booed as well. So I'm not quite sure exactly what type of route people would want them to do otherwise to get their message across.
Yeah, good stuff, Cameron. Really appreciate it. At Cameron Wolf on Twitter, and you can also read his stuff on ESPN.com. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
All right, that is Cameron Wolf. I thought that was well said.
I think he's had really good stuff on ESPN.com. I think he's done a nice job just coming in. I think he covered the Raiders before. Is that right? His background? And he, I think, has picked up the beat and done very, very well. Good insights, good breakdowns of games. I think he's doing a good job.
What did you think of what
I've never met Cameron. I don't even know him. Yeah. That's the first time we've had a chance to have him on the show.
Yeah. What did you think of what I said and what his response was? Do you agree? You feel differently? Feel like it's so muddy now? Because I think that's what he was saying. It's so muddy right now that maybe it's hard for anybody to even now figure out even what's going on because the water is so muddy from all this stuff.
I agree a lot of what
Cameron.
From
the comments? Is this from a racial injustice? Where are we? What do you, you know?
I am 100% in agreement with what Cameron said. I think an athlete has the right to use the platform. At the same time, I'm also thinking that the next chapter has yet to be written on how do you take this passion, your desire to create some change to the next level. And I think the anthem thing has sort of run its course to a degree. I think the league is trying to move forward from that. Let's take the focus off of the anthem because, as you said,
that's what I think people.
That's
can't
what
get
turns
past.
A lot of people off. And so, is there a better way? Now that you've made your point, because I think it was a worthy thing to do, to create this discussion. It was a firestorm, and it got everybody talking, and it was passionate, which was what I think they set out to do. Have a response, particularly to the comments from the president, which I thought were out of line. It deserved a response, but now. Let's find a different angle. Let's keep it going, and let's see if we can get the teams to back you up. I think the NBA has done a pretty good job of taking initiatives like that, where it keeps going. There's a more of a movement collectively by everybody, and it's not just guys here, guys there on their own. I think it's more effective the more people you have involved, and you could separate it away from issues that are bogging it down, and that is specifically the anthem.
He brought up the
anthem is a turnoff,
right?
At this point,
that's what I said. That is, you're not going to those fans. They're not going to be swayed. They're not going to be changed to feel differently. That they have made it abundantly clear the way they feel about this because of, like I said, it's all about the timing. It's not about the message. It's about the timing of the message. And those fans that are outraged, and we know it's now. It's a lot, okay? It's significant. you're not going to change their minds. So to your point, don't back off of the message. Maybe find a different way. He brought up the NHL player. I think it was JT Brown, right, on opening night? But has he done it since?
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know if he's been consistent or if it was just their opening night game that he had his fist up in the air. We'll take a break. If you want to weigh in, talk to us, 737-1025. We'll take your phone calls. We'll come back with more of 3D next on 102.5 The Game. I shouldn't get so hung up on you. I remember the way that we touched. I wish I didn't like it so much. I get so emotional, baby, every time I think of you. I get so emotional, baby. Ain't it shocking what love can do? Ain't it shocking what love can do? In keeping with our Whitney Houston theme today,
I have a request. I'm going to text you the request, Chase, for the next Whitney Houston song.
Okay.
My personal favorite.
Cutting Edge, I'm sure.
It's probably not one of the top five Whitney songs that you might just have on the tip of your tongue if people start saying, name some Whitney songs. So I think it's underrated.
By the way, if you're looking for a place to watch the Tennessee and South Carolina game, go to Beyond the Edge in East Nashville. Vols watch party with our folks at ESPN right here on 102.5 The Game. Braden Gall will be there at Beyond the Edge in East Nashville, which is Willie's neck of the woods from 11. Remember, 11 o'clock kickoff till 4 o'clock. Go to Beyond the Edge at 112 South 11th Street in East Nashville. Vols and South Carolina. So if you're looking for a good place to watch, go hang out with Braden Gall and everybody there. Let's go to Adam in Clarksville. Adam, what's up?
Hey, buddy. I appreciate y'all squeezing me in. I know y'all Titans this hour, but I do want to say one moment in time, Whitney Houston, best one, underrated she sung. Also, our Predators last night, man, period number three. The real thing that makes the Predators run, and I'm not a diehard hockey fan. I haven't been my whole life or anything. I'd be lying if I said I was. So I'm just kind of learning the past couple years. Our defense seems to be what makes us run so well. And even if we're not scoring a bunch of goals, you can be playing really good offense, and sometimes other goalies just playing really well. But when our defense is on, it makes it really hard on other teams. And that third period, they barely got any shots off. And they had a couple of them where Pekka made nice saves, but that defense looked right last night. That's the first time all season they looked right. So I was happy to see that.
Okay, Adam.
Could not agree
more.
Good
call. Thank you.
I thought in the third period that was the best – team defense that I've seen. They held the Stars without a shot for about 10 and a half minutes during that period. And that's where guys like Nick Bonino and Alexi Emelin
played his best game as a Predator.
Guys who were brought in for that two-way game, less glamorous, but they're starting to find their spot on this team. That's a good sign. Now, this will be a heck of a test on Saturday. Am I right?
I mean,
that place is going to be absolutely out for blood. So if you can go into that building and play that game and find a way to get 2 points, what a statement that would be.
After the Wild handed it to him last night in Chicago, in the United Center, third period, 4 goals by Minnesota to pull away.
We've talked about it. The Blackhawks are still the Blackhawks, but they have weaknesses. They are relying on a lot of young players that weren't ready to get it done in the playoffs last year, and the Predators exploited it. And now on top of that, they've lost Marcus Kruger. They've lost Marian Hossa. Now they've made the trade. They don't have Panarin. They have Saad, and Saad has done well.
And he's helped Toews. Toews is off to a good start.
So that's worked out great. But there's still question marks there. They don't have Nick Jalmerson. That is a staple guy. They still have some weapons, but I'm really curious to see what it looks like on Saturday.
Well, what I'm curious to see that you will get to see firsthand is the atmosphere, because it's going to be different. It's going to be a different vibe than I think any other trip the Predators have had in Chicago, because the mentality has changed because of the playoffs. We've discussed this before, and I get the feeling you're going to You're going to feel that vibe on Saturday. It's going to be different. It's not going to be big brother, little brother anymore. There's going to be a little bit more of, all right.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, because, you know, I said last night.
There will be straight up hatred.
The two of us were there last year for games one and two, and the Blackhawks fans would come up. It's open air booth. They would come up, shake my hand. Hey, good luck tonight. You know, it should be, you know, but it's almost like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, believe me. I'm
like,
telling you,
know,
I'm going to go into character for you just made
like
the list.
We're doing the good luck, but I'm saying good luck and being nice because I know we're going to beat you. That was the approach, right? That's what they were doing. Like, good luck. Hey, this is a cute story. It's always fun when we play you guys. I know you guys will battle us hard. I know you guys are going to get us ready for the second round. But, hey, good luck. Good seeing you, Nashville.
Yeah, we'll see how many of them
I don't believe
have that
they'll
same
be,
approach.
There'll be greetings like that tomorrow night.
Well, my first clue was during the draft when we were up there. They booed the Predators every single time it was their pick, anytime the commissioner mentioned.
Which tells you right there, it's different.
It's different. It will be different.
It's going to be loud. It's going to be real loud. Like I said, they no longer view Nashville for good reason because they got their tails whipped last year. They got swept and they got made to look really bad doing it, right? I mean they blew up. I don't want to say they blew up the team, but they made a lot of changes because of how they played in that series and how bad they looked and how bad they were outplayed. In that series. I mean, that was the first time you looked at Chicago. Remember, we talked about it and went, wow, they actually look slow. The Predators are running circles around them. Certainly, they saw that too. But I'm just telling you, the mood in the building is going to be like no time you've ever seen when the Predators come into the United Center. It's going to be different. It's no longer, hey, cute. Oh, it's great. I love when Nashville comes in. Hey, I love going there too. You have a fun city. Love visiting there. Like, that may still be in play. Like, they may still love coming to visit here. But I'm telling you, they don't look at the Predators the same. Those days are gone. John in Spring Hill. John, what's up?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I don't get to listen to you guys as much as I was like because of the work schedule, but I was able to today. And
well, darn it, tell your bosses to rearrange your schedule.
You got that right. Or at least blast it through the system.
There you go.
Office place. That would be good. Just a couple questions. I have not heard discussion, I'm sure there has, but about P.K. Subban not being voted captain or an assistant captain, is there anything that you guys know of or as far as in the locker room, or is that bother him, and is he fine with that? Second question would be Gerard. Are they going to end up having to keep him here and burn a year of his rookie contract or send him away? And then last is that Lindsay Rowley was a very nice move on many levels to send her to the desk with Crispy. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, John.
Lindsay's doing a great job. I think Kara Hammer's doing a great job, too. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to hear much of what she's done on the sideline, the rink side. There's no sideline in hockey.
That, we've got a story, the sidelines. Let's go down to sideline reporter, Kara Hammer.
Yeah, I think they're both doing a good job. They work very hard. And I think they've jumped in great.
Yep.
Crispy is still Crispy.
Yeah, just wind him up and let him go.
The Gerard question will continue to be out there, but right now he's playing his way. You know, he's only played two games. Let's pump the brakes a little
small bit. Small sample.
But he looks like he's got something special. There's no question. Long term, he's in the plans. They don't have to decide today. But I think the percentage chance that he sticks is rising every performance.
Yannick Weber in the lineup, Yannick Weber out of the lineup. How much does that change their decision, in your opinion?
I'd be very surprised if he is available on Saturday.
Me too.
I think there's a chance that Roman Josi can come back on Saturday.
But explain to people, there's, you know, a lot of people understand, but a lot of people don't. It's easier to insert him in the lineup because if you think about it, there's a lot of people wondering, well, they've played two games before this homestand. Why wasn't he playing, you know, in Boston and Pittsburgh? It's different on the road than at home, that you control more the decisions at home. You have a little bit of an event. Coaches have an advantage at home than on the road. So it was an easier spot to put him at home because you can then game plan, right? And so that does change the dynamic of home and road. Fair?
You can protect
can protect
a young
him.
Player
yes.
easier at home, because after a stoppage, you get the last change. You get mm-hmm. the last selection. You get to see who the other team is putting out there, and then you get to match up
and you get to adjust
accordingly. You don't have that matchup advantage on the road. So it will be a tough test for him. This will be a real test for him, and I think he'll be in there one way or the other, regardless of
so
who's
you
available.
Think it
who's
wouldn't
not.
Matter if it was if
I,
seven
I
was
I don't
in
see
or out.
How I yeah I don't see how you can keep Girard out even if Yossi comes back. You have Anthony Boteto, who has played plenty of games, and I right now he's caught in a numbers game. I think he's a legit NHL defenseman, but Sam Girard's skill set is so unique you cannot ignore it.
No,
you can't ignore it.
He pops. He jumps
before,
out at you.
I will just say, when we were on the road, one of the discussions that I would have with the different people on the road trip was, this is before Roman Yossi got hurt, is it's just a matter of time before they're going to try Girard. And we were just asking, what if Girard just looks clearly better than some of the other options there? Now, I think it was very encouraging that Emelin looked like he belonged.
Game.
Yeah, he was fitting in with the group. He was playing
and
the
system. And he had a tough assignment.
And he was showing what, yes, against a very tough. And really, the last two games, he's played important minutes against top players, and I think he's responded. This has gone a long way, I think, for his standing. He was a healthy scratch in the second game.
Yeah.
They sort of delivered a little message, we need more. And I think he has come back strong.
Now, as for the PK question, look, he's a part of the leadership group. He was in there. He's in that leadership group with Pecorine and Nick Bonino. So he is part of their leadership group. Doesn't have a letter on, per se, but he's part of the leadership group. I mean, look, it's...
He has...
Look, they have tough decisions. This was not easy, which is a really, really good problem to have, right? If it's real easy on slapping letters on people, that means you probably don't have a strong group in your locker room. They have a very strong group in their locker room. I'll be the first to admit, I was saying a lot of good things about Matthias Ekholm because I thought he deserved it. I wasn't sure he would get rewarded with that, and I was pleasantly surprised he was, because he deserves it. I mean, Matthias Ekholm is vitally important to this team on the ice and off the ice. They had tough decisions. They have a really good group in that room.
Yeah. And PK is a part of it. I think
right.
some
well,
of it has to do
he
with how long
the,
you've been there. This nucleus
been there a year.
That have been there longer, I think, probably have a little more inside track of getting the letter. But they have worked Subban and Nick Bonino into that group.
Those two guys
very
were the,
smartly.
When you think about in that locker room, they're the youngest yeah. guys, as in Nashville, in that locker room, and yet they still recognized what they bring to the table and made them a part of a leadership group.
And P.K. Subban, I think, has a great – the older he gets, I think he continues to understand. I think he's fine with the setup. I think he's glad to be part of the leadership group. Would he love to have a letter? I'm sure he would. But he's been around long enough to know. He's seen sometimes where the wrong guy gets the captain or the A, and it doesn't always sit right with everybody. So I think – this group, one thing you can say about them is they're pretty tight. They're pretty tight. And the large majority of them have been through a lot together over the last 3 years, sometimes four. They've grown up together.
No doubt. We'll come back, wrap up hour number two of 3D on this Friday next. Whatever you want from me. Made the list around the corner. Some good prizes for that, so we'll ask for your participation in the third hour of 3D.
Okay, now this is my underrated Whitney Houston song right here. Thumbs up on that one?
Yeah, I don't really know if she's got very many underrated songs. She had a lot of hits.
Oh, absolutely.
So I don't know. It's hard to find the underrated category for somebody that had so many hits.
I mentioned this a week or two ago, but there's a documentary that Showtime, one of the movie channels, has out on, it's a very sad story, but Whitney Houston and her demise and ultimate death with the drug issues that she had. It's a really sad story, but it's very interesting to watch her rise and everything like that. But what a talent. What a great talent. Now, Darren, we got a big game. Remember last year when Vanderbilt played Kentucky, the week of that game, and you and I were both sitting there going, you from more of the Kentucky perspective, that's your school, Vanderbilt's my school. And we talked about how many times does the loser of the Vanderbilt-Kentucky game sit there and say, hey, good season. It's rare. And last year, Vanderbilt somehow recovered from losing to Kentucky, who looked awful at the time, and Kentucky rallied and had a pretty good year.
Well, they finished strong.
And that win against Vanderbilt was a good little mm-hmm. springboard for them. Vanderbilt had their spring later in the season.
They beat Louisville at the end of the year. I mean, they finished up good.
So both ended up making it to a bowl game. But I think this is an enormous game for Vanderbilt this weekend going to Ole Miss in a little bit of a similar respect. Everybody was so excited when they were 3-0, especially having beaten Kansas State, who I still think is going to end up being about what people thought. Maybe not 18-15, but I think they have a chance to be a fringe top 25.
8-14.
Yeah, probably what they could end up on the fringe of the top 25. I think mm-hmm. they're a solid team. Disappointing that they didn't beat Texas. That would have been a big win for them. But I still think that was a valuable win for Vanderbilt's program. Then they faced, you know, the very tough competition, three straight weeks, and that is tough to deal with, right? Especially Georgia and Alabama on your field, other teams' fans invade. It can be demoralizing. So now you have a game where it's a much better matchup going on the road to face Ole Miss, who is a mess, right? Ole Miss is kind of a mess.
Kinda? No, they're a mess.
But I noticed Ole Miss is still favored in the game, right?
They are. What is it, a field goal? 3-4?
Yeah. So what does Vanderbilt look like going down there? Because it's on one hand, you're saying, ooh, Vanderbilt's got to be chomping at the bit to play somebody that they match up a little bit better with. But at the same time, this game by no means is going to be easy.
Well, no, Ole Miss is going to remember what happened here last
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. There's one reason
they
right
got
there.
Embarrassed.
They didn't like that at all. They still have fans that care, Ole Miss. There's a lot of pride down there, even though I'm sure they're sitting there going, oh, boy, these next few years are going to be interesting. What are we going to do? But when Saturday happens and the Grove opens up, the Ole Miss fans are going to be there, right? At least a lot of them. I don't know if it's going to be packed to the gills or anything, but they're still going to have a good atmosphere down there, and they're not going to want to lose to Vanderbilt. In fact, Ole Miss is probably looking at the rest of their schedule going, what are the games that we can win?
Not very. I mean, you got LSU.
Got to get jacked up for Mississippi State, the Egg Bowl. That's that.
Mm-hmm. A&M, Arkansas,
right.
LSU. At Kentucky.
So they're probably looking at this game going, got to beat Vanderbilt. Can't go to a bowl game, but we're trying to have a respectful season. We've got to beat Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt cannot afford to go down there and say, well, Ole Miss doesn't care. Ole Miss is on probation. We beat them last year.
I think the last 3 weeks will take care of that, don't you think?
I hope so. But
if you're going down there riding a high, it probably would be a little bit more challenging for the coaches to reel them back in and say, hey, hello, let's focus on this. Is not going to be easy. Don't think it's in the bag. I think they're – I mean, how could you not be focused? I mean –
But it's tricky, though.
You have every, and I mean every motivation to wipe away the last 3 weeks, which has got to be, as we talk to Derek Mason every week, the worst taste in the world in their mouth, because two of the three, they've been – humiliated. I mean, they really have. They've been outplayed badly.
Right. Not just with the score, but just the way that they were physically.
I mean, when you don't even get past midfield in one game, I mean, that's getting
right.
humiliated at home.
And the Georgia game, they had some moments. I think Kyle Shurmur each week gets better. He is really good. The running game showed a couple of flashes last week. But the bottom line is, particularly on defense, that has gone from the talk of the town after the Kansas State game, right? Shut down three straight opponents, looking at the stats. Now their confidence has been shaken big time these last 3 weeks. They have been run all over. That's where I would start. I just think it's a tricky game to get motivated for because they have a bye week after that, right? They're also beaten up a little bit.
Well, you don't know really what Ole Miss is because they beat two cupcakes,
yeah,
and they've lost to anybody with – now, they've lost to two really good teams. Alabama, it's like Vanderbilt, right? There's no shame in losing to to Alabama and Georgia. Now, you don't want to lose in the fashion that you did. There's no shame to losing at Auburn, at Alabama. I mean, in Tuscaloosa, right? Those are two impossible road games.
But they have some talented players.
And they were embarrassed like Vanderbilt. But those were two road games, two really, really good teams, and they lost at Cal. I don't really know what they are. I mean, they've lost, I would say, the Cal game was a little bit more of a toss-up. They've lost the games they were supposed to lose. They've won the games they were supposed to win. And then there's this at Cal game where, you know, I don't know what the Cal Bears are. They're like a 6-6 team probably this year.
All right, let's ask this question this way. If Vanderbilt had gone, let's say week four, Vanderbilt 3-0 after beating Kansas State is going to Ole Miss to play Ole Miss that week. What is the line?
Vanderbilt by 7.
That's what I'm thinking. So Vanderbilt has gone from what looked like a game they would be favored in, but after these three losses where they've all been spotlight games, CBS, ESPN, ESPN, and they haven't looked very good. Now they're an underdog against Ole Miss. I just think it's a really interesting mental test to a veteran team to jump back up, get morale back up, get your confidence back up, particularly on that defense. That defense had a swagger after the third game. They believed. And now everything that they have done has had very little success for three straight weeks. Can they get back to doing what they were doing before now that the matchup looks a little bit better on paper?
If they played them in week four after beating Kansas State in 3-0, they go down to Oxford probably favored by 7, 7.5.
I agree.
Instead, we know what's happened. Now they go down there, and they're an underdog by 3, 3.5. That's the difference.
And the other question I have is now that, again, they're not facing a Georgia front, a Florida front, an Alabama front, can they start running the ball a little bit? Because I'm convinced, and I can't believe I'm saying this, based on what we saw. If I'd have said this 2 years ago, you'd have thought I was crazy. If they can run it a little bit, Kyle Shermer and the receivers will make the plays. They've got a lot of different guys to throw to. He's a good passer. Can you believe we're saying that?
How times have changed.
Yeah. Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
Solid passer.
Last two seasons, it was running to set up the pass.
And if you got 150 yards passing, you were thinking, great. Oh, this is great. We're having a great day. Now it's completely different.
Roles have reversed.
So the makings are still there for an excellent season for Vanderbilt, but this is a big game. This is a big game. Because I think right now you're still sitting there going, you're not shooting for 6 wins. I mean, you got to get to 6 at least, but you still got a shot to have a 7 wins.
Well, as we've talked about, the rest of the way is much more manageable compared to
every game,
the last 4 weeks.
It's like Al Dorsey was saying yesterday in terms of Tennessee. And he was very cynical about it. But the way he put it was everybody's bad.
Minus the test.
Or everybody's mediocre.
Game, yeah. Everything is right.
So who's the best of that group of teams in the league? We're going to find out over the next several weeks. And this is a big start.
We'll come back, kick off hour number 3 with You Just Made the List. Who's on your list? Make you feel better. Get something off your chest. Something that's been bothering you all week. Is it something or someone? Give us a call. We'll do that next. 737-1025. You're listening to 3D.